One of the great unsung stories of the First World War was the part that the Scout movement played on the home front from 1914 onwards. The Scouts were created by Robert Baden-Powell a few years before war broke out. To some extent, they were based upon his experiences in the Second Boer War in South Africa, which ended just a few years earlier. And by the time the First World War began in August 1914, the Scouts had already developed the sort of skills and training that would enable them to make a valuable contribution in many different ways, as we'll now hear from the archivist and historian of the Hertfordshire Scouts, Frank Brittain.
Just take us back to the beginning of when the Scouting movement was actually formed, and perhaps why, to some extent.
The birth date is given as the 1st of August 1907. That was the date that Baden-Powell, the founder and national hero, had carried out an experimental camp on Brownsea Island in Dorset, in Poole Harbour. He selected boys, all boys of course, no girls, who were at boarding school, and boys from the boys' brigade in Poole, and he mixed them up together. So he formed several patrols. About four patrols. There was 21 boys in the camp. So there was four patrols with a public school boy as its patrol leader. And they were kept there for a week on Brownsea Island, out of the view of the public. And they worked through a number of chapters of a book he was writing, which was to be called Scouting for Boys, which was published on the 14th of April 1908 and has remained in print ever since. It's never been out of print and is known as the fourth most read book in the world.
What was his background? You said he was a national hero because he'd been involved in the Boer War, I think, primarily. Was that his biggest military involvement?
His biggest military accomplishment was the defending of Mafeking. The Siege of Mafeking, it is called, from the Boers, and I think it lasted 171 days. There's been books written about that siege over the years. He had lots of boys there who were confined within this town, and he was able to use them for running errands, and he found that they were receptive to different instructions, and they'd carry them out, and they could be relied upon.
Okay, so he comes back to England after the war, after the siege
Queen
of Mafeking.
Queen Victoria considered this success and achievement as being a significant feature of the war, and he was proclaimed a national hero.
And what would his observations of the society that he came back to have been?
He was concerned that young people were seen to be hanging about the streets under lampposts, smoking cigarettes with their shirts hanging out their trousers, and he thought that he ought to write this book to give young people some guidance. So he started putting it together. This would have been his ninth book that he wrote in his life. By the time he actually started the Scouts in 1907, he was 50. So he was not in the prime of life, but he was a man of great experience, lived in South Africa a lot of his life, started the South African police force, had only two women in his life, his mother and his sister. In those days, of course, in the army, he was in the company of men all the time. This was a natural thing.
Okay, so he's come back to the country. He's trying to put into practice or create something which is a value to the young people. It's also, by definition, a value to society because it helps to build structure where there might not be any structure. And within a few years, the First World War breaks out. And how did he respond to that?
Well, he could see this coming. He had, by this time, of course, scouting had started fully in 1908. And he had started a national magazine, a weekly magazine called The Scout, which was published from also about April 1908. And he wrote in every copy, every week, he wrote a page giving instructions to the Scouts of the UK and, in fact, the world, because it eventually spread all over the world. And he explained for instance, about the First World War, why it was happening, what was happening, and how scouts would be expected to play a part in the defence of England by working on the home front, not to be involved in the conflict, although he and his wife, Olive, were involved in the First World War. They went to France and helped with rehabilitation centres, which were set up by the YMCA and run by older scouts who were not fighting. Generally speaking, scouts were not involved in any way in the fighting.
No, except that, of course, many of the soldiers would have been scouts when they were younger, they so were. They would have carried, they would have been.
And in fact, historically, well after the war finished, 13 scouts were VCs.
The role, you say you described it almost as a sort of home army. At the beginning of the First World War, the population was as sort of perhaps terrified that they were going to, the island was going to be invaded, or the islands were going to be invaded by the enemy. And so what sort of roles did you see the Home Guard, if you call them that, the scouts as a Home Guard? What was their role?
Well, they were used to guard bridges, lakes, viaducts, reservoirs. They were, you see, scouts were picked because they were trained already in observation, seamanship. They were trained in first aid, survival. All their badge work achievements helped them to be qualified immediately to do these jobs. Because they were trained in observation, they could see all sorts of things. There was 8,000 Sea Scouts used to guard the shores because all the Coast Guards had been called up.
Sure.
Or so volunteered.
That's right, the manpower that was...
So Sea Scouts were the obvious people to go and camp in these different places and observe shipping.
So did the call go out from, if you like, from head office, from Baden-Powell himself,
yes,
saying, we need... Did he, scouting is organised by county, is that right, or was then?
Yes. Ward was declared on the 4th of August, and in St Albans, which we know historically as being the first scout district in the country to set up as a home front system, they were formed up and separated into shifts, four shifts per day, to have them on duty by telephone to give a service to the police. A lot of billeting soldiers in St Albans, of course. Hundreds camped on different areas of open land. The town clerk, as it was, the council, wanted letters delivered. They wanted soldiers billeted. So scouts were the obvious people to take people and show them round.
They were a voluntary labour force in that sense. What age
they would have been 14.
They would have been 14.
14.
Okay.
They couldn't start before they were 14. And of course, at 14, they would have been at work.
Because the school leaving age was 14.
Yeah.
For me.
And they were instructed to go to work in scout uniform. All the employers were informed that they may have to leave at a moment's notice if they were called to show some soldiers where to billet or any one of 100 jobs. We've got diaries from St Albans that were filled in at the time with all the jobs that they did. All boys were given a number, which they wore on their sleeve, and they were all given capes to wear in bad weather. One of the councillors, Councillor Part, thought the boys ought to be protected against the weather, so he invested in capes, different sizes. And we have the cape issue book, which they had to sign in and sign back in, because they couldn't keep them. They had to bring them back afterwards. And I noticed that some haven't been returned yet. So we've got a lot of documentary evidence of what happened in St Albans.
But if, of course, if somebody was 14, they've left school and they've gone to work, but then they've got this other job on top of them, which is whether they're guarding a railway line or a bridge, or they're running messages, they're taking messages, they're doing all sorts of different things. That must have been quite tiring because they were working in the daytime and doing this in the night time?
Well, either at night or in their holidays or whatever. 156 scouts in St Albans were all on the list in this four-hour shift. Obviously, they couldn't all do it at the same time, but there was obviously enough to put on a creditable performance. Mm. Looking at these diaries where they all signed in, some of the names of the boys, as they were only young at the time, became, years later, quite important figures in scouting.
And presumably, as the war went on, various other developments came in. There was a blockade, there was a potentially a food shortage. The men from the rural areas were being going joining the army.
Yeah.
So did the...
Voluntaries to start with.
Yeah. That's right, conscription came later. But did the scouts have a role in the countryside?
Yes, they... Well, one of the things that they had to do that was necessary, or they thought was necessary at the time, was the collecting of conkers and acorns, because they had a substitute in there for cordite. Oh. And although it all proved to be useless in the end, schools as well, not only scouts, but schools were given a day to go and collect conkers and acorns, and then they were all piled up on railway stations to be transported to Norfolk, where they were then crushed and whatever.
So I've read that in another part of the country, I think it was presumably it was East Anglia, they went to collect flax, which was used.
Well, flax is a different thing. Of course, flax was a growing, it was grown from the ground, and it could not be cultivated by machinery. It could only be cultivated by hand. So flax camps were set up in Cambridgeshire mainly, and many scouts from St Albans and Hertfordshire went to these camps and stayed for a fortnight or 3 weeks, where they worked gathering flax, which was used in the main for covering of aeroplane wings, but also was used for rucksacks or haversacks and footwear.
Yeah. And did they also work in the country in the way that the land army did in the Second World War?
Yes, there were farms created where scouts worked. Well, lots of young people from different organisations worked, and they were paid, you know, like a shilling a week or something, to work on these farms and make them into a business.
Yes.
That was all part of creating and educating young people.
And when the war came to an end, did the scouts' role finished?
Of course, what they thought was that because the war came, scouting would finish, because all the scoutmasters, as they were called then, were called up or volunteered. But what happened was that in those days, there was a system, the patrol leaders... They were the older boys who had a patrol of scouts under them. They had a court of honour. That was their little meeting. And they decided that they would run the troops so that they didn't close. So the boys, the older boys, 14 to 16-year-old boys, became the scoutmasters until they were called up, of course.
Yes. And so it would have gone on, that's right. And then after the war, some of the soldiers came back and the system carried on, and it's been going on for 100 years and more since then. Frank, we've only scratched the surface.
We have, yes, right there.
We're going to have to come back to this, but I'm going to have to say thank you very much for the moment, because we've gone on for a while.
Okay.
We can look perhaps another time at the role of the women, the Girl Guides movement, which started at the same time, and perhaps we could go forward into the Second World War as well,
yes,
where the Scouts had a role as well.
No problem at all.